Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires.
My guest, her name is Maureen Kennedy. She is a philanthropist focused on tax policy and K-12 education. She is the former Assistant Secretary for Policy at the Department of Housing and Urban Development from the Clinton administration. Welcome, Maureen. I'm so glad you could make time for us. You yourself are a patriotic millionaire, and you've talked a lot with your friends about the PMs. You've talked a lot with your friends about tax policy, about education policy. Why did you join the PMs, and why do your other friends in a similar financial situation feel about being part of the PMs?
You know, I don't have a lot of other friends who are in this similar situation, I must say. But I first came across the Patriotic Millionaires on Facebook. I had a friend in the neighborhood who I didn't know anything in particular about their financial situation. And he talked a little bit about what was going on with the Patriotic Millionaires. Maybe it was April 15th when we do a lot of stuff. And I just thought, you know, I love taxes. And I love policy. This is an organization I should be checking out and getting a better handle on. And it's just, they're super smart people, and our interests and perspectives on tax policy are just really aligned.
Yeah, I think, you know, I often say, and I've said during this segment frequently, if you care about child care policy, you care about tax policy. If you care about working families, you care about tax policy. If you want to see stronger border security, you care about tax policy. Mm-hmm. So let's jump in. Let's talk first about the minimum wage. Trump has refused to support raising the federal minimum wage. It is a poverty level. It is $7.25 an hour. That is the federal minimum wage that applies in the state of Wisconsin. We haven't raised it here. Why is this important? Why is raising the minimum wage good for business and good for middle class Americans?
Well, it's good for middle class Americans. Let's talk about that for just a minute. As you say, it hasn't been raised since 2009. When, you know, I'm 66. I'm going to tell you guys a lot of very transparent stuff about me. I'm 66. Back in the day, I worked at McDonald's when I was 17. Truly, it was never on my resume. And I made $2.95 an hour. And I was in high school at the time. I didn't have two or three kids to support. These days, a lot of folks who work at McDonald's who are getting the minimum wage do have two or three kids, and they are very likely to be women. The people who are most affected by not increasing the minimum wage are going to be moms and moms with children. And it is outrageous to me that we're in a society where we feel like it's okay to make those least able to bear the brunt of our bad policy bear it. So that's my view on that.
Yeah, it's incredible to me that we have to have a discussion about the minimum wage. It hasn't been raised since 2009. I don't know why we don't index the minimum wage to inflation, to the consumer price index. In other uh-huh. words, so that it has a normal, reasonable cost of living adjustment. Republicans have stood in the way of that sort of reform, both here in the state of Wisconsin and in federal government. When we just sort of zoom out at a 10,000 foot level, from your perspective, you are well-to-do. You have a retirement that you can rely upon. Do you uh-huh. think that government is doing what it should be for working people in this country?
It can be doing, it can be working for working people in a couple of different ways. Things like defending unions and people's ability to advocate for their own interests, right? And we are not as strong on that as we should be, I think. It can be doing things like making sure that the earned income tax credit, which I assume you guys talk about from time to time,
yes.
is working well and is at the right number and so on and so forth. It can also do things like invent the internet or really contribute to AI. So there are lots of ways that the government kind of gets involved with these things. My perspective is that the things that matter the most to working people are the least likely to have been supported through time. There's a guy, I don't know if you listened to the Pivot podcast with Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway. Scott is a maniac on the issue of the minimum wage. His view is that if you wanted to improve outcomes, but also welfare policy in this country, there's no better way to do it than to increase the minimum wage, because basically at that point you've got, you know, everybody has to comply. You can't get around it. But more importantly, you're in a situation where people are getting paid a wage that is responsible and it, you know, respects the work that they do and so on and so forth. You're not saying to them, oh, go work at Walmart and then go on welfare to kind of cover your gaps, or go down to the food pantry to pick up extra food every week. You know, that is not a living wage. That's not the way this thing is supposed to work.
Well, it's incredibly two-faced, if I can put it in this way, for mm-hmm. conservatives to beat on the battle drum of bootstraps, right, and the value of hard work, when they refuse to pay people a living wage for hard work. I mean, a fundamental starting point of discussion that I've often shared with various friends of mine is, listen, we agree that hard work is the backbone of the middle class. It drives our economy. We rely on middle class and working people in this country. If we agree that if someone's willing to work 40 or 50 hard hours, mm-hmm. decent, respectable hours of work, they should be able to live on that. There should be a dignity wage. We can actually figure out how much that costs in various areas of this country. And with some variation, it's de minimis. It basically requires a $20 an hour minimum wage. Yep. That is what mm-hmm. it requires. And we are so far from that. So it is not, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear yours, it's not a reasonable position to say we're a bootstrap place and we believe in meritocracy, but we will only guarantee an hourly wage at $7 and a quarter.
Right. And I think this is a real generational shift. Again, not to obsess about baby boomers and so on, but back in the day, you made an income. Let me make sure I can. You made an income, it increased over time. Your housing costs were relatively modest. Your health insurance costs were relatively modest. Your expenses for getting a college education were relatively modest. In California, you could get by with paying, you know, $2,000 a year maximum if you're an in-state student. Now, your income is, as you guys probably talk about all the time, basically flat since 1979, but housing costs have gone through the roof. Healthcare costs have gone through the roof. Education costs have gone through the roof. Healthcare costs have gone through the roof. Why do we think that somehow working class people are not working hard enough if they can't solve that equation, right? It's just crazy to think that you can somehow, especially somehow solve that problem without turning to the government and saying, hey, you guys need to kick in money for my childcare. You need to kick in money to subsidize my earned income. And this is, of course, assuming that you're actually working, because there are plenty of people who can't work for a variety of reasons, either because of health issues, disability issues, they've got very small children, all kinds of situations.
And to me, when you talk about minimum wage and fair wages, it also requires a discussion of tax policy, because to me, one of the most overwhelming level ups that we could do for the middle class and working people in this country is not only that $20 an hour minimum wage, but to say if you're only making $41,000 as a household or less, we're not going to place a federal income tax on that because you are barely scraping by. We can shift that tax burden to the people that have more than enough to live and get by and thrive and buy the second and third homes and boats and lots of cars and things. Mm-hmm. Talk mm-hmm. to me about tax policy. How biased is the tax code, Maureen?
Well, a couple different things, but let me make one really quick point on this. We have, as you know, in 2025, this once in more or less a decade moment to kind of get the tax system in better shape.
Yes.
The current tax arrangement that we've got dates from 2017. They basically locked it in for 8 years all the way to 2025. And so if we don't get this done in the next year, we're kind of locked in for another 10 years. The tax, and as we all know, in 2017, what the Trump administration did was it torqued the tax arrangement so that it benefited higher income people. I used to be one of those high income people, okay? I have a lot of assets right now, but I'm retired, so I don't have the income that I used to have. But until I quit working, coincidentally, about 3 months before COVID hit, I was paying 50% as my marginal tax rate. And that was completely fair because I was making a lot of money. And, you know, the federal tax rate at the time was 39%. And we all paid it, right? This is not new. We all pay, all of us who were making that income all paid 39%. It's not like somehow everybody deserves to be paying 37%. We were all paying 39%. And then I was paying 10% basically for California state tax, 2.8% on top of that for a millionaire's tax. So 50%. And now my tax rate has gone down quite a bit because of the Trump tax adjustments and a bunch of other stuff that has happened in the meanwhile, some COVID benefits and so on. And
yeah. So
forth.
If I can just jump in here, what I hear you saying, Maureen, is before you were paying a much higher effective overall tax rate, not just on a marginal basis for, you know, income dollars earned over X and Y and Z. And now because of the Trump tax cuts, you pay much less. You believe your position is you should be paying more. Other people in your position, other millionaires that belong to the Patriotic Millionaires that have been guests on this show, believe they should be paying more because it works to support the middle class. Today, our special guest is Maureen Kennedy. She is a Patriotic Millionaire. She was also Assistant Secretary for Policy at HUD during the Clinton administration. Welcome back, Maureen. I want to talk about the differences between income tax and capital gains tax. Can you explain it? And then can you explain or express your opinion? Is it fair that a dollar earned from wealth is taxed at a much lower rate than a dollar earned from work? Because it's one of the mysteries of the universe that I can't quite square.
I will get to that in 1 second. Let me just follow up on something you said earlier. People like me believe that we can pay higher taxes and that we should. I think there's a bunch of other people who think that they can or know that they can do it, but they think, I don't have to, I don't want to, I just won't do it. So I think that's a big distinction here. So capital gains versus, so people, you know, there's the whole arrangement that everything's divided between labor and capital, right? Labor and machines, labor and stuff other than a working person using their body to get stuff done. So as a result of that, we've always had an arrangement where you're taxed for your labor and there's a different arrangement for the way that you're taxed for everything else. Tax rate on labor right now goes up as high as 37%. Tax on everything else is only 20%. So I'm in this fabulous situation where I'm no longer working. That means I'm not paying 37% for that marginal chunk of the money that I'm making. Any given day. I could be making the exact same amount of money on an annual basis, but make it off of my stocks and bonds, which is basically exactly what I'm doing. That's the capital part or the business part of my financial picture. I could be making $500,000 in cash from my job or $500,000 from the money that I have in my Schwab account. And right now I'm paying 40% of what I was paying when I was working. So my tax bill is 40%, 60% lower than it was just because I happened to be getting that income from my stocks and bonds. So you can imagine that for people like Musk and Bezos and all those guys, they're in many cases, they actually are working for $0 or $1 a year. They're getting lots of stock options and other kinds of benefits like that. And that's why they're only paying a maximum of 20%. And then they can do a bunch of shenanigans to get the number down even lower.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to me that certainly it sounded innocuous back when stock options became a huge part of executive compensation. Like, oh, that seems reasonable, but it created basically a very short-term reward horizons for CEO, big incentives to sort of juice numbers to hit sometimes what are artificial metrics. And of course, it allowed the richest workers in the United States, the CEO class, to avoid paying their fair share in income taxes because they just sit on the stock. And if you never sell it, you never actually realize the gain. You don't pay anything. You pass it along and everybody gets away literally tax scot free. Right. I wanted to.
Right. You're just getting the dividends.
Yes. Just the dividends. Thanks much. I wanted to also ask you about somebody who's got a 401k, right? And many, if you're lucky enough as a worker, you've got a 401k. What do you think about, you know, how that fits into the mix? Because I've had people ask me about that. And generally speaking, Marie, my answer has been, listen, those of us with the drippings from the table, yes, it's good when the corporate profits are up and those things are happening, but we are a tiny, tiny, tiny little fraction of those who actually own shares. Can you speak to this issue a little bit?
Absolutely. Somewhere recently, I saw that the average worker in the U.S. has like $25,000 or $30,000 in their retirement account, whatever that might be, their IRA. In my case, it's an IRA or a 401k or a 403b if you work in the nonprofit world. And that is not enough to retire on. Obviously, we used to have pensions. We don't have pensions anymore because, you know, corporate America thought that was tough and inconvenient for them to have these long-term obligations to retirees into the future. So they said, let's just pay out a little bit now in a matching arrangement into the 401k accounts. I think 401ks are great. You still have to pay taxes on it, right? At some point you're going to retire, you're going to start taking money out of that and you're going to pay taxes on it. So while it's tax-free or tax-deferred now when you're putting money into it, you know, the federal government makes absolutely sure that eventually you're going to have to pay taxes on it. Rich people don't ever have to take money out of their 401ks, right? They can borrow against it. And in some cases, even write off the interest that they're paying as they get a loan against their 401ks. And then they pass it on to their heirs. And unfortunately for all of us, when they do that, there's no tax paid, you know, either, because it just becomes part of their estate.
If you've got, I mean, to summarize here, one, those of us with 401ks, we're very lucky, but we're a very small sliver of actually who owns stock in this country. Two, we end up paying tax on that because we have to live off our 401ks or our IRAs in retirement. Rich folks, they're not using those tools. They're using tools that allow them to avoid potentially paying any tax at all on it. Closing thoughts, Marie, what do you want an average working person here in the state of Wisconsin that might lean a little conservative, you know, that generally thinks, oh, we don't need to raise the minimum wage, tax policy's fine. Tell them in a minute, Marie, what they should know. Less than that, 30 seconds, friend.
Two quick things. One is, because I have my housing background, depreciation is a really big scam.
Yes. You know,
basically, it's the federal government saying, we think that your house is going to be losing value in the coming years when your investment property, when in fact, we all invest in it precisely because we know it's increasing in value. And so that just doesn't make sense. We're all not in the position to be making so much money that we don't have to pay taxes.
Thanks so much, folks. That's Maureen Kennedy, a philanthropist and a patriotic millionaire, who joined me today for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.